You're listening to Danny, Dave, and More.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's a 5 o'clock refresh. It's brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Final Four in the NFL. Why don't we call other sports Final Fours the Final Four? Just the Final Four? Like, they trademarked that. That was a very smart marketing move by the NCAA. Because it seems like Final Four you could apply to a lot of different things, yet we only ever associate it with the NCAA tournament.
Elite Eight, Sweet 16.
Yeah. Final Four is the best one, though. All the other ones feel like that was just tacked on after it. Final Four set the template.
Yeah, you know, Dory, since we've been doing the pre- and post-game show, 2004 is when we started doing it, and following the Seahawks and everything, he has been had an NFC Championship weekend at his house. And we go out and play basketball and stuff. And last year, I went and played basketball. Do you remember me coming in here super sore? Not the time I did yard work, but the time I came in and we played basketball for like an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Was you doing it again this weekend?
Yeah. I actually put off knee surgery just for that.
So you're still going to hoop?
Yeah. I'm going to try anyway. Yeah, it was tough last time. But anyway, but I love those games. Those two games, I mean, I don't know if it's better this last weekend, you know, with those games, but the conference championships are awesome. And one of the reasons why, I guess, I think sitting through three of them and, you know, the Seahawks winning all three of them, it's pretty cool. And the other thing is, we talk about the number one seed. You win two games and you're in the Super Bowl. That just doesn't seem like you have to work that hard. You know, the Chiefs.
All your work was in the regular season getting to that, so you could have the luxury of doing that.
Right. I mean, you're sitting there and you get a bye, and then you get, like, the Chiefs, they get the Colts coming in there, and now I got the Patriots coming in there. What about, like, what San Diego had to do? I mean, they had to go to Baltimore, turn around, and go back to New England. I mean, yeah, that was a tough road. And that's why I kind of like seeing the underdogs in there. But, man, this is something you forget about, that when you win the division or you get the number one seed, that you're just cruising.
Yeah, it's similar to the March Madness tournament in that the first round, everybody gets excited about the Cinderella teams and the huge upsets. But as you go a little farther, you start getting those one and two seeds and the chalk starts coming in.
This will be the sixth straight year that both Super Bowl teams were either first or second seeds. That for the sixth straight year, both teams in the Super Bowl will have had a first-round bye in the playoffs. The last team that played on Wild Card Weekend to make the Super Bowl was the Baltimore Ravens in 2012. So Russell Wilson's rookie season, the Ravens played that first weekend. They weren't a Wild Card team. They had won the division, so they played at home, but they hosted a playoff game and a Wild Card. That's the last team to win three games to get to the Super Bowl. Everybody else has just won two.
It just seems like there for a while, like the Giants, when they ended up beating the Patriots, they were a wild card team. Wasn't that the year they went in and beat Green Bay?
They did beat Green Bay, and Green Bay was the top seed. I'm not sure if they were a wild card or if they just won the division with a 10.
Yeah, it was like a 10-6 record or something like that. So, but yeah, I like seeing that. The Baltimore Ravens, when they won it in 2012. Did they win their division?
They did.
Yeah, but they were kind of an underdog team. I didn't think that they were going to, you know, not a lot of people thought. What was the Patriots when they beat the Rams in 2001? Do you remember? Were they
I'm not sure if they were a 10-win team. I think 10-6 is what it strikes me as, but maybe they were better than that.
I was looking at some of the odds on Super Bowls. Super Bowl III, do you remember that, Jim? Jets and...
Oh, the Jets, were they 17-point underdogs?
18 points. And then, you know, some of those were for good reason, like the Niners, 18, I think, were favored by 18 over San Diego in 1994. So, yeah, some of those were pretty lopsided.
That San Diego game wasn't good.
It was terrible.
Yeah. But in 69, I mean, one of those things that Joe Namath, that there's a picture that he's just sitting there at the pool and all the writers are around him and he's guaranteeing or predicting they were going to win. Yeah, it was that one was memorable.
Patriots were 11-5 in 2001. That was the year that they ended up beating the Rams. The question with the four highest scoring teams being the final four that are left here, does that mean that we're entering a new era where offense is king? We asked that to Mike Ditka, who joined us earlier in the show.
Well, I think I really think the game is it's matured to a point now where I don't know what you can do defensively. What they're doing offensively is pretty hard to stop it. And if you got weapons I mean, you can only there's only so many things you can do. If you think you're going to play zone, you're crazy. You're going to have to match up and play man or double up. And right now you got at least on every play probably four people who can catch the ball coming off the line of scrimmage.
Well, Dave, what do you think about what he says there about playing zone, that you're crazy?
Well, you have to play, I guess, kind of a different kind of zone. You know what fixes all this? Pass rush. You know, if you can get pass rush, Mahomes seems like the one guy that doesn't really get bothered by it that much. I know Goff does. Goff might be the worst, I think, when you get pressure and get him out of the pocket and on the run. I've seen him this year against the Seahawks in particular make some of the worst throws I've ever seen from a quarterback when all of a sudden he gets, you know, scared a little bit in the pocket. But, yeah, that helps. Zone, I mean, look, you have to play zone the right way. I'd say more than this, and Moyer and I were commiserating over this. I told Paul jokingly over text, I said, you and I should go on a 32-team little seminar where we teach everybody how important force is. Force turning the running play back inside. Or, you know, the same thing in zones. Like, guys drop to zones, and this is an old man thing, right? Like, the kids these days, they drop to a zone, and then they sit there and stare at the quarterback. You got to take a peek and see what the receivers are doing. But, you know, I'll say this. I think Mahomes does a really good job of moving guys with his eyes, and then they'll run, like Leach was talking about, layered patterns, where there's a guy underneath you and a guy behind you, and which one do you jump? And so, no, I mean, cover three is not dead. It's just that against certain teams, you got to play it differently.
Let me ask this a different way. What kind of – instead of questioning whether or not offense is transcendent, is this more than just a year? If we take the idea that if offense has in fact moved ahead, so to speak, on defense, the possible reasons for that. One of them would be the officiating, that either more penalties are being called against the defense, which benefits the offense by sustaining drives. The Seahawks felt that firsthand. They had two pass interference penalties called on third down situations that kept them from getting the ball back against the Cowboys. The second part of that would be that the threat of penalties has changed the way that defenses have played. And that would be more akin to what's happened in the NBA. The NBA, higher scoring game now than it was in the 90s, in large part because you're not allowed to hand check anymore. And guys have stopped hand checking. That's changed. There's a different. You can't play defense like you used to, and maybe there's some of that that's happening.
Do you like that more in the NBA? Because I do.
I hated the hand check in the NBA.
I didn't like the bad boys reign there when there were final scores of 87-85 all the time.
It was an ugly. What we see now is better than what that looked like. But football is also a different sport. Like, I don't mind football being more physical. Like, I wouldn't mind it. I don't mind a lower scoring game. The other part of this is if officiating would be one sort of criteria category there. The other one would be the complexity of the offense, the type of offense. And I think I know where you'd stand on this, Dave, but it's not like somebody's invented a better mousetrap that's made it impossible to defend.
No, they're just executing. I mean, you've got a guy like Patrick Mahomes that can throw on the run and everything. That's why I say it doesn't bother him, the pass rush on him. But, no, I mean, I think, look, early on you saw that fly sweep affect a lot of teams. Remember the Seahawks got gashed for like a 58-yarder against the Rams the first time they played them, but we didn't see much of that at the end of the year. I think people started to kind of pick up on it. It was kind of like the read option when the Seahawks started running it in 2012 when Russell came in here. Teams have kind of picked up on that. There's a couple of times this year that it looked like Russell should have kept it, and then the times he did, they were like right on him, except for Detroit. He got outside there, but, you know, for the most part, it was like they were all over it. So then they started bringing a tight end across to block for Russell on the read option, which was a good little adjustment there. So that's kind of what, you know, defenses and offenses go back and forth. And, you know, that's, to me, I don't think that's changed. I don't think it's magically the offenses are going to take off from here. You know, I was going to say, you mentioned not just the officiating, but the threat of officiating. Let me ask you guys this. Do you think that does Cam Chancellor either not make that hit or get penalized for that hit across the middle on Demaryius Thomas in Super Bowl 48?
I don't think he does because of how Thomas fell. if that makes any sense.
It seems to me when you blow up a guy, there's going to be a yellow flag.
Yeah.
But he didn't get blown up. He got knocked backward. And this would be a part of it. This will take a second. But Ken Hamlin, do you remember the hit he had on Dante Stallworth?
Yes.
Somebody posted it today. A guy named Parker Lewis on Twitter, who I follow and does great different video elements.
Is that where Dante Stallworth's eyeballs were popping out?
That's correct. And you see Stallworth's helmet rocket off like a cork out of a champagne bottle. It was a Seattle Times photo because I remember seeing it. His face is disfigured because the physics of the collision are sorting themselves out. He's kind of bent over. It looks like a potentially fatal kind of collision, like how hard he gets hit. And the subject of it was, I don't even think this play got flagged. How much football's changed? I sat and looked at the hit. I think the hit's legal. I think the hit itself.
There's no helmet to helmet or anything
no,
like that.
No, I think under today's criteria. Now, it would get flagged, just like Cam Chancellor's hit on Vernon Davis got flagged.
Because it looked so bad.
It looked bad. So it would get flagged. But by the letter of the law, his hit, it's his shoulder. He doesn't hit him with his helmet. And the initial impact is to Stallworth's chest. Now, Stallworth's head kind of comes forward and touches. So maybe there would be some contact to the head or neck area because he ended up hitting him there, but the main impact is right to his chest.
Yeah.
But I would say this, I don't think his hit on Demaryius Thomas gets penalized because it doesn't look like that Stallworth hit.
Yeah, but maybe he doesn't get penalized on that, but maybe he never makes the hit in the first place. You know, I mean, and that's the thing. I always think about this, that, you know, you're supposed to go lower, and that used to be a taboo amongst players. Like, you know, when I got cut and my knee dislocated, I was like, why couldn't he have hit me in the head? Why couldn't he hit me up high? Why did he have to go and chop out my legs like that? So, you know, I feel like that's going to happen. A safety's going to come barreling up out and just try to go low, and a guy's leg's going to be planted in the ground, and it's going to be really ugly. And then I'm gonna be like, well, okay, what does the NFL want to do now? You can't hit him low either. Where are you supposed to hit him? So, I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it. Those kind of hits used to discourage a lot of patterns. I mean, we used to call that a hospital ball. I mean, that's on the quarterback. You don't throw that ball when you know that the safety's gonna crash down and blow him up. And, you know, and he doesn't know, the receiver doesn't know, because he's being led into it by the ball, but that kind of stuff doesn't happen. There's no threat of that anymore. I think that has at least something to do with it. And like I said, I don't know that that hit gets called, but I don't know that Cam tries to make it, because these guys are trying to change and do all the, and if that hit doesn't happen as hard as Cam does it, or he just, you know, tries to wrap him up or whatever, does that intimidate their offense the way that it did in 2013?
Do you think that was the most important play in the game? Like, when you go back and look at that Super Bowl, I voted for him, for Cam Chancellor, for MVP in the Super Bowl victory over the Broncos, because part of it was the importance of Cam, but I also thought that, given everything, that kind of just made it clear that, okay, this is going to be an entirely different sort of rock fight that the Denver Broncos were utterly unprepared for.
Yeah, I thought it set the tone, you know, and the same thing with the Vernon Davis hit. I mean, they ended up getting a penalty that put him down on like the 2-yard line, but they ended up holding him to a field goal there and returning it. Richard Sherman returned it, so Red Bryant blocked it. I felt like that was a turning point in that game.
We've done something kind of fun today. This is the 5 o'clock hour, brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. Mike Leach is potentially going to be teaching a class at Washington State later this semester. It's with Michael Baumgartner, who's a former state senator, and it's war strategy and football, kind of the similarity between guerrilla warfare and football strategy that are there. We're coming up with different ideas of courses that you would like to see taught by an athlete. From the 425, Advanced Gymnastics. So be in the PE department by Chris Carson. His ability to flip, especially when he landed the flip.
That'd be good.
That'll be one of the things that I will always remember about this season, is that Carson flat out cleanly hurdled two different players and then had the play where he flipped over and landed on his feet without going down. I can count on, it's definitely not more than 10 times in the NFL that I've seen a player actually hurdle someone. Clean hurdle a guy trying to tackle him like Chris Carson has, and he did it twice this year.
First and 10, Seahawks. Handoff to Chris Carson. He breaks through. He tries to leap. Whoa, he's still on his feet. Kidding me? He did a 360 in the air, came down on his feet, and kept running out to the 35-yard line.
It was a backflip.
Where does that rank with the things that you've seen?
That was one of the more amazing things I've seen, especially when you see the picture. Danny, he's 14 feet in the air. That's what Danny thought. I also thought General Sherman, the tree, the sequoia, was 600 feet.
Yeah. What I thought.
275.
In my mind, what I thought is, okay, Carson, what, he's 6 feet tall. He jumped probably 2 feet off the ground. Like his when he's 2 feet off the ground when he gets hit, and then the impact of the hit spun him completely on top, as if the axis he was spinning on.
Yeah, the head was the axis of
he would spin on his center of gravity.
Yeah, yeah.
So he might have gone up a little bit. So it might have been 10 feet off the ground. 10 feet is possible. 14 feet was ridiculous.
Well, the thing I remember thinking about seeing that was he was in midair. I was like, this is going to end badly. Uh oh. I mean, that could...
It's going to turn into a lawn dart.
If he'd have come down and landed wrong on his leg or something like that, I don't know how much more he's going to be doing that, but it's pretty amazing to be able, on the split second, to be able to think that's what I'm going to do.
What'd he get, an extra yard or two out of that?
Yeah.
It's too bad that he didn't turn it into another 20 yards.
Yeah. That would have been... they probably would have gone back and reviewed that. There was some question as to whether or not his knee was on the ground there.
Yeah.
And I thought... Throughout that game, I thought that Ron Rivera didn't challenge it because he was too busy going, wow, that was awesome. I've never seen that before.
It's pretty unbelievable that he was able to pull that off. Economics 500, this is an upper division class. This comes from Ryan Herzog. Monopoly Power and Worker Exploitation by Mark Emmert, former UW
Mark
president
Emmert.
And now in charge of the NCAA.
Mark Emmert has, as you pointed out about somebody else, he has Lego man hair.
Yeah, he has the hair of a Lego person.
Lego person hair.
Looks like you could just pop it off. Who was it that I thought had it? Oh, I know who it was. But hair like a little Lego person. You familiar with those where it just pops right off?
Yeah. Mark Emmert's got the hair going, doesn't he?
You also called him.
He could teach a grooming class.
You also called him Fife Boy in print.
Fife Boy, yeah. He's down there. Actually, you know, I got along with Emmert pretty well. He was good-natured about it. He would give out the Coug jabs, the Apple Cup jabs, but... is he still the president of the NCAA?
That's correct.
Is he?
Yes.
They haven't seen through him yet?
Nope.
They haven't?
He might be the perfect bureaucrat for that, man. Like, he might be the perfect guy to stand up there. He's like, look, we know this whole thing's a charade, and what we do here at the NCAA is essentially glorified internal affairs without any sort of, like, enforcement or investigative arm. So just get up there and use a bunch of big words to talk about how we don't really do anything.
Yeah. On that note, how about Media Company Management by Larry Scott?
Ooh. Yeah, I was thinking Media 201, How to Talk to the Press by Marshawn Lynch.
That should be like a 300-level class.
Effective communication strategies that would be there. Other ones that have been suggested, Food Science and Human Nutrition 301, Supplements in Your Body, taught by Barry Bonds. That comes from Marilyn Washabaugh. All of the different things that you could bring up, Herding Cats by Jessamyn McIntyre. That was a zoology course we referred to
and
earlier.
And you've got some.
Yeah, I put together a few. My favorite is a criminal justice course. It's arrest protocol in Washington, in Arizona, in California, and in Florida. A firsthand account by Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah. Anytime I hear his name, I think of Hope Solo, and I think about a Kirkland courtroom on their wedding day.
That happened. That actually happened. Psychology 3-5.
Hold on there. Can we review that one again?
Yep.
Did they get married in Justice of the Peace style?
They got married that night.
That night.
After one of them got off of whatever the charge was.
So one of them got off of a charge.
Jeremy was in jail.
And then they say, hell, honey, since we're down here, let's go to the Justice of the Peace and get ourselves hitched.
Well, that was the whole thing of did he go from one courtroom spot to another, but apparently the wedding was elsewhere.
Oh.
He was released, and then they went and got wed.
I think they're still married.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're very, very happy. Psychology 353, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fig. This is taught by Eric Bedard, who was notorious for his, I don't know what you'd say, indifference. Like, he's the most indifferent professional athlete that I've ever come across.
Yeah, and what'd Shannon say that he's doing something with his wife now as far as...
She sells shoes.
And he's helping her do PR with that?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
She sells shoes. I thought you were going to do a...
By the seashore.
Seashore.
No. Good Lord, no. You think I could pull that sort of pronunciation off? I can't even pronounce the professor. Business 525, How to Get Money for Nothing. This is taught by Sean Figgins. Jim McElvain also involved. There's no shortage of people that you could get. Jerome James also plays a little bit of a role. Leadership 101. This was suggested by Clay Leland. Being more like the Peterson boy, taught by Chris Peterson over at the UW. Because that was Mike Leach at the Apple Cup Peterson's the kind of guy that your parents always like, why aren't you more like the Peterson boy? I would like to attend the Tom Wilhelmsen Dance Academy. I like that. That came from Brittany Bale.
I love the bartender.
Yeah, he called it quits this year. Did you
see
that?
Such a great story. Yeah, he was fun.
Yeah, it was good. We do want to pause, and this is something on a much more serious note. But today is the one-year anniversary of Tyler Helinski's passing. It was today that a year ago today that he was found with a fatal gunshot wound, self-inflicted, over at Washington State. And kind of on behalf of our show, thoughts and memories, really our thoughts are with the Helinski family and really everyone over at Washington State and the Washington State football program. The second part is we spent a lot of time after that talking about the importance of mental health and talking if you're having trouble. I'd talked about my issues with depression, the fact that I take antidepressants. Actually, I changed the prescription. I added a different one a couple months ago because I was having some issues. And it shouldn't take a tragedy for people to be reminded and to think that if you're having a hard time and if you are in an unhealthy space, if you are thinking about harming yourself, to really get help, because there is help. And being in a part, being at a point when you're thinking about harming yourself is unhealthy. It is a problem, and you need to talk to somebody about it. And we shouldn't need a tragedy to emphasize that message. So our thoughts and memories with Tyler Helinski and his family. We'll be back with more Danny, Dave, and Moore next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's a 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frostbrew Coors Light. We got some funny texts. There are some funny listeners. From the 425, Eric Bedard is now Al Bundy? That is too funny, because Al Bundy sold women's shoes.
He went to Polk High.
Yeah, he did. I don't think they were state champs in 1981, though.
No, they were not.
That was Wooster High School Colts.
I like this one, Archery 101 by Fernando Rodney.
I had that one there.
Yeah.
Astroscience from the 801 by Professor Wilson, Luke Wilson. Advanced Physics, Moving Objects and Stopping Them by Walter Jones. Right. The whole, a body in motion tends to stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force or Walter Jones.
What do you think Russell Wilson would teach?
Russell Wilson would, the power of positivity. It would be some sort of mental.
I have sports cliches.
He's got all of those.
I just saw Bull Durham where, remember Tim Robbins' character? Was it Goose LaRouche?
Nuke LaRouche.
Yeah, and he taught him the whole, God willing, go out there and, sometimes it rains, sometimes it doesn't. Well, he had all these cliches about, go out there and take them one at a time, and that's Russell Wilson. Remember, we all thought that was a phony program that he was running. It's him.
No, that is him.
But he's smart, because you can't get in trouble that way. Has Russell ever said anything in the news that, in whether it's on a radio interview, whatever, where it sounded like, whoa, hey, easy there. That's either politically incorrect or you're going too far one way or the other.
The closest I can think of was recently when he was cleaning out his locker when he said maybe we should have passed the ball more than we did. But it was, boy, it was just really, it wasn't bad.
Benign, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be watching the Seahawks, unfortunately, or watching this weekend. We had Mike Ditka on earlier today, and this was a question. I first heard it on Bob Gross and Tom. They brought the question of, in this season where you've got the top four offenses playing in the conference championship games, how would the 2013 Seahawks defense do? How would that look? How would they play against them? Here was Ditka's answer to that.
Well, probably the Seahawks are probably the last one that, really had that kind of defense. So I hate to say it, but I think it's become a scoring game. You got to outscore your opponent. And you're going to see these last four teams that are in here now, you're going to see some scoring in these next 2 weeks, believe me. And, the Patriots, they're a great football team, but they score points. They make you score points. If you're going to beat them, you're going to have to score points, period. And then basically that's what they do.
You got to outscore your opponent.
You do. That is a truism. That will always be true.
What Mike meant there was that, you know, look, you're going to have to put some numbers up. And that's what the Seahawks tried to do against the Rams. And they did do it against Kansas City because that was a 38-31 game. I mean, they had to put up 38 points to win that game. So, yeah, I just don't think that it is a trend or something that's going to continue. And if it is, we might see, other than the fumble into the end zone, more rules start to benefit the defense.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Dave, because, you know, you sit there and you talk about, and I agree with you because we've seen it, the fly sweep hasn't been that much of a factor. I mean, it is, but there's a new play. And then you talk about the read pass option or the zone read or whatever, and that seems to have been shut down. But what penalties do you think? And the defensive players always talk about, boy, they always, you know, they cater toward the offense. But I think there's going to be a shifting there. Do you think we'll see, like, if someone from the NFL was to talk to you, Roger Goodell or whoever, and said, okay, Dave, what penalties should we change or be more lenient with or get rid of or add to? What would you say?
Yeah, well, I would say get rid of some of them. And one of them is hands to the face. I'm sorry, nobody ever really got hurt by getting their face mask. You know, and they say that is a safety one. Why?
What, that it leads to concussions or something?
I don't know.
I
because you're not hitting him very hard.
They're worried a guy's head's going to pop off. That it's actually like going to be leveraged, that it's going to come off, and it's going to be like Dante Stallworth's helmet, only the head's still going to be inside.
Well, I used to say that if my helmet ever came off during a game, my head would be inside it, because I don't understand guys losing their helmets. Mine was strapped on so tight that, and then the next day when I would go and, you know, to practice, I'd try to pull it over my head like, man, what was I thinking yesterday? But you're all, you know, wired up and everything, but yeah, that would be one. The hands to the face thing, I think, is ridiculous. And you saw maybe the worst call ever, hands to the face, in that Ram-Cowboy game where Byron Jones got it on a third and long. And what he did is he jammed the guy. Same thing when defensive linemen are pass rushing, where they will, you know, start to drive a guy and then their hand slips up and gets to their. Now, if you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then, like I tried to do to Terry Obie that cut me into the mud, you know, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty. I probably should have been penalized for that. I don't think I was.
You got away with that one?
Well, the only reason I got away with it is because Richard Dent came running off the sidelines and pushed me down. So they were like, okay, those two evened out. But, no, I mean, if you're not – how about this? And Moyer and I have been complaining about this since 2004, that a running back can just jam a defensive player right in the face mask. No problem.
It's a stiff arm.
Yeah, but, I mean, what about hands to the face? I mean, if you're really worried about safety, and the tackler's coming up, he's got his arms down because he's getting ready to wrap up, there's nothing to protect him. I mean, you should have your hands up to kind of hack it down, but that is just as dangerous as hands to the face on a defensive lineman that's rushing an offensive lineman.
I think the biggest impact that officiating has, and this is, I think the biggest impact is the points of emphasis and not the rule changes. Maybe a little bit in how quarterbacks can be hit, that you now can't hit them low and you can't hit them in the head, that you basically got to hit them right at their belly button, and that's about it. But I think more it's the points of emphasis. It's illegal contact. It's defensive holding. Like, those are the things that have, in the league's mind, they're trying to free up the passing game to keep and eliminate the clutch and grab. And it's probably similar to the NBA's decision of, we don't want hand checking.
Yeah. Well, I had just gotten started, just so you know. So go ahead, Danny.
I did not mean to cut you off.
No. I mean, I think, honestly, I think that you can lighten up on some of those pass interference calls. But the other thing is just about how they call those penalties of unnecessary roughness. First of all, roughness is necessary in the NFL. That's why everybody loves the game.
What about when Richard Dent ran off the sideline and hit you? Was that necessary?
I deserved it. Totally deserved it. And I don't carry grudges, so I don't care. If I saw Richard Dent a little while ago. Who's the gal? Oh, she's in a CBS. She used to be a CBS reporter in NFL. Anyway,
Andrea Kramer.
No.
Dang.
Anyway, I came out on the Chicago field, and she handed me her phone and said, can you take a picture? And it was her, I can't remember, maybe Jacob Green, and then Richard Dent. And she got in there, and I took a picture on her phone. And Richard Dent was standing right there, and I wanted to go, hey, you remember coming right here on this very field and pushing me down? But it's like, it didn't matter. But, yeah, there's a lot of those things that you can all of a sudden start to favor. Like, I just wish that the rulemakers and the people who call it and then the people who watch it can understand. I wish they could understand how difficult it is to control your body on the field when you're flying around at full speed. And so you see these slow motion replays where the guy's like, oh, look at that. He hit him right in the face or whatever. You know, it's like that stuff changes so quickly. And I guess I wish that there was a way to simulate that for people so that they could go, okay, now I see that, you know, and this is what we talk about, like it's not the Matrix. You can't freeze in midair. Human reaction time has a speed limit, and, you know, they're asking too much of players. So to me, I would say put the roughness back into NFL and make it necessary roughness.
Yeah, the one change I'd like to see is pass interference go the way of college football and not have it a spot foul penalty.
Rule change, yeah.
The thing I was wondering, too, about, Dave, is we talked to Mike Leach last week, and with Cliff Kingsbury going to Arizona, and I know that there've been partial air raids in the NFL and concepts and that type of thing, but if he's got a full blown air raid there at Arizona, do you think that's going to work in the NFL?
Well, I mean, I think there's certain concepts of it that will work. Like I said, Leach said that, right? He said, "How'd you like the New Orleans game?" You know, where they, or maybe it wasn't New Orleans, it was the Patriots. Patriots, he was talking about layered routes and, you know, some of the bubble screens and things like that. I mean, that's all part of the air raid.
I loved that part of it because nobody comes in with this system that is entirely devoted. Nobody else runs anything like this, and we've got proprietary information. Almost all offenses include elements from multiple different schemes and thought processes where you've borrowed, you've adopted.
Well, it's a copycat league. Chuck Knox used to, after every time we were beat by a certain play, we would go out the next week and watch his offense practicing it. Dave Craig throwing the route. Like, that play looks familiar, doesn't it, guys? That's the one that beat us for a touchdown. So, yeah, that stuff just gets passed around the league.
I would think there's only so many plays you can do, but
There is.
But I changed my mind a little bit watching the Cougs this year, though, when they ran the big gulp. Remember the big gulp play that they ran?
What was it?
Where they would put a guy out in the slot, and then they would snap the ball. Jess, can you help me explain this? They'd snap the ball diagonally back to Minshew.
He kind of threw it back to him.
Yeah, and it was called the big gulp, right?
Because the swinging gate?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he had a line in front of him.
The team called it internally the big gulp, yep. Yeah. Or they joked that they called it that.
Yeah, I'd seen that before.
Have you?
Yeah, teams that used to line up in the swinging gate, and it was a big pain in the ass because it caused all special team coaches around the league to have to plan for it. But you would go out and line up against it, and the kicker would be over there with the snapper, and then they would go over and make sure. And if you weren't adjusted and you didn't send anybody out there, then they were gonna you know, snap the ball to the guy and have him run it.
I remember the Indianapolis Colts running that play just a couple years ago under Chuck Pagano, and it was the worst example.
That was on
of it
a punt.
Ever.
Yeah.
Wasn't that they were going for it on fourth down?
And then all of a sudden they had the punter go, and they snapped the ball, and there were two defenders over the center, and there was only one guy blocking there.
Yeah.
It was the dumbest play I've ever seen
in my
life.
There was the center. That was it.
It's Danny David Moore. This hour brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. Somebody's got a great suggestion about lowering helmet and an exception to that rule. We'll read it for you and get some other thoughts on how to bring defense back next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
This is our Danny, Dave, and Moore, brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. This was one of the text suggestions about rule changes that made me laugh, which was the idea that, well, every rule should have and include kind of a little caveat. Some exceptions to the rule, this comes from the 206, that would make them even more ridiculous. Like leading with the helmet is a penalty unless two players hit one another simultaneously, because that'd just be awesome to see. Like, pass interference is not allowed unless you're able to actually knock off one of the receiver's shoes, in which case everything's tolerated. And it sounds ridiculous, but that's kind of like what the blocked punt rule is. The blocked punt rule might be my favorite rule, which is you can't touch the punter unless you first tip the ball, in which case you can do whatever you want to him. That dude is fair game. Don't touch his plant leg unless you block the ball and then mess him up.
I'll bet you can't put your elbow through his face mask.
Hey, there's no rule saying you can't.
Well,
do you like the 5-yard, 15-yard difference there with the block kick? Or is that just college?
Oh, the running into the kicker?
Yeah.
I do like that difference because sometimes running into the kicker is very different from roughing the kicker. Roughing the kicker, in my mind, like, you have to really look like you don't care what impact you have. Like, you really put him in an awful position.
Well, that call the other day was weak.
Yes, it was.
Against the punter because he didn't touch him. Indianapolis Colt player didn't touch the punter, and then when he came down, he kind of flopped. But even if he comes down and lands on you, I still don't think that that should be a penalty. But
he should have a path to land, right?
Yeah. Well, no.
No?
Why?
Well, he's got to be able to be safe.
Do I get a path to land when I'm a linebacker? Does Chris Carson get a path to land? How about the 360 who's too weak because they don't allow you to reply, said, do away with the helmets and there'd be zero injuries. That's great. There'd be no blown knees, no torn Achilles, because you weren't wearing helmets. And also, it would be an entirely different game.
It'd be rugby.
It would be. It's ridiculous. And even Michael Dixon told us he played Australian rules, and he's like, the hits and everything are so much different. So much different. Because you'd cave your head in if you hit somebody that hard with the helmet on.
Well, that's
without a helmet.
At the risk of endorsing the 360's suggestion, which there's part of me that has thought that's the if the league is trying to make the collisions and lessen collisions, is that a way to do it? Is to remove face masks because you won't be able to tackle at full speed. It'll be a different sport, and it would remain to be seen whether people would like that sport as much. But it seems like watching the Ken Hamlin hit, like I'm convinced that a big part of it isn't like whether a rule was broken, it was how the hit looked. And when you look back at that, that's not that long ago. It's 14 years ago that he hit him like that. If that happened today, you would see league-wide indifference. It would be like when Danny Trevathan hit the receiver from Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Is that Devontae Adams?
Yes.
And you saw that. And I think a big part of the outrage there was because you saw, was it a mouthpiece or an ear pad?
I think his face mask came off.
Something came off because it looked like a car crash. And then everybody's like, oh, my gosh. And then what did we do? We talked about what a terrible person Danny Trevathan was.
For just playing football.
Yep.
And then somebody tried to convince me, well, I talked to all the coaches around the league and that cleaning up the pile stuff is over. I'm like, that's not what that was. That was him hustling to go and make a play. And, you know, that's the thing. If you don't do that, it leads to the kind of crap that we saw in the Minneapolis Miracle. And, you know, guys not going up and hitting a guy because he's afraid he's going to get penalized. So it's just they're asking too much. And, you know, for the guy that, you know, said all that cleanup stuff is, you haven't been out there. You don't know how fast it is. You don't know how quick that happens. And, you know, I think it's hurting the defense. Definitely. And that's something that, you know, again, we talked about, you take away that Cam Chancellor hit and, you know, that's probably a different game, or he doesn't even make that hit in the first place because he doesn't want to get penalized.
Yeah. I was a little surprised that I know that the ratings are up this year and I think it has to do with scoring and not having the protests, but I thought maybe there'd be still a downturn because people are getting turned off by all the rules and trying to figure that out. We had one listener, the Coors Light text line, check in with saying he watches 50 to 70% less football this year because of the rules. So I don't know where this is headed, but I'd like to see some changes because it's just strange to me. It's not like I sit there and think I know everything about football, but I used to know when a penalty was a penalty, and yeah. I don't necessarily know that anymore.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, like you should be able to recognize it at home. It shouldn't be a surprise to you. Like, what? That's not a penalty. So I guess it doesn't cause me to turn the TV off, but it bothers me and it ruins my day. I'll be up there screaming and yelling, and Shannon will be like, you know what? The Seahawks aren't playing. I'm like, come look at this penalty. This is ridiculous. You know, so it just kind of makes you it worries me because this is a game I love. And I'm not looking for blood or anything, but I just, again, I can't emphasize enough that I just wish everybody could understand how quickly things happen and how a lot of these penalties are not correctable. You know, that's why you have a penalty, right? Is because you're trying to create some kind of a change in your behavior. You're trying to modify behavior, and a lot of these are just by accident. And a lot of times the guy will like make a shoulder tackle and people go, oh, that's the way to do it. Like that happened by accident. What if the guy put his head down? It would have been a helmet to helmet thing and there'd been a penalty. So it just, I guess that's the one thing. I don't want to sit there during games, any game, and watch some terrible injustice to a team because of a horrible call.
It's Danny Davenport. We'll bring in the professor, have him join the conversation. That's coming up next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's time for us to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Jessima McIntyre. No, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
I mean, I'll bring it.
Featuring Jessima McIntyre.
I will bring it.
It is brought to us by Jessima McIntyre. Bring it, Jess.
All right, guys. Well, we started out learning today about some college course suggestions for the future.
We've got some more class suggestions, including, well, one I think it would be by Dave, taught by Dave Wyman. Suggested by the 253, I believe this is a sociology course, The Wussification of American Sports and Parallels in Millennial Privilege.
Not just millennials. I don't want to just focus on just the poor millennials. There's some tough guy millennials.
From the 206, Fashion 500, Ridiculous Outfits. Teacher, Cam Newton. Mining. Well, Mick Fuzzy on Twitter says, Mining by Steve Sarkisian, reference to him getting caught on the TV when he was up in the coach's booth digging in his nose.
I thought it was going to be a reference to the gold machine.
Well, I didn't. Yeah, Coach Sark, that was not one of his better moments.
Digging his nose.
Pick play?
Yeah.
That was funny, Danny. I liked it.
You got to know. You got to know that you're on TV.
No,
right?
You got to not pick your nose.
What's wrong with picking your nose? Everybody does it.
It's gross.
Danny, don't
everybody,
say you don't pick your nose.
Everybody
I don't
picks
pick my nose.
Nose.
Ever? You
what?
Don't ever pick
in
your nose
car?
In the privacy of your own home, in the bathroom,
in the
shower.
Occasionally in the privacy of my own home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not when I'm available to be watched by TV. You guys don't see me picking. Do you ever see me digging in my nose in here?
No.
Yeah?
You ever see me doing it?
No, I don't.
Do you I'm doing it secretly then.
Do you ever do something in the comfort and privacy of your own home so often that you don't realize you're doing it in public?
No.
I don't think so.
How about you?
I'm sure I do. That's why I just thought of it, because I'm like, well, I'd most certainly pick my nose at home. I wonder if I do it without thinking about it.
Yeah, you hope
you
not,
do
right?
You pick your nose?
Yeah.
Do you? I probably.
I mean, I use a tissue. I don't just, fling it on the floor.
Yeah, I think I probably bite my nails in public and don't realize I'm doing it.
We did realize. We found out that you bit your nails.
Yeah.
Your
from
sister.
Your sweet sister.
Yeah. Jimmy, you're biting your nails.
Jimmy, you're down to your cuticles,
yeah,
Jimmy.
It's sad. Man, I need therapy. I need help. Yeah. Well, I'm quitting, you know, different things at a time now. Day 16 now of not drinking.
How's that?
Good for you.
It's
and
better
then
than
the
day
diet on top of that. With Evolve 180, and then the next thing I'll tackle is the cuticles.
One thing at a time.
Yeah.
We'll do that. I'll take care of the cuticles for you. We'll put a shock collar on you. If I see you bite your nails, I'll jar you.
I like that suggestion for the officials.
Except you shouldn't put it around their necks. You should put it somewhere else.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's a quick, one
where,
day fix?
Dave?
One day fix?
In his bathing suit area, Jim.
Okay. No pun intended with fix. We also learned that everybody wants in on this show.
The Happy Hour is brought to you by Heritage Distillings, batch number 12 vodka.
This is Danny Davis.
Ooh! Big voice lady. She was horning in on it.
Would you jump the gun there, or
no.
Did she?
We got some
fucking song.
No, not them. Wait till tomorrow.
No news! Good news! Bad news!
I like the mocking there. That was good. I enjoyed the mocking of the morning show.
Was that the first segment that came to mind?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
that was
what
pretty
I think
funny.
Of. They have a lot of bells and whistles.
Yes.
It is a train, and it's a great train, but it's got a lot of bells and whistles to it. Highly structured. We're the opposite. Unstructured.
I would never try to structure you boys.
That's right.
I raise free-range hosts.
That's good.
I don't believe in structure.
That's right. Pasture raised.
Range.
We finally learned today about the time Wyman got away with one.
I have to grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then like I tried to do to Terry Obie that cut me into the mud. You know, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty. I probably should have been penalized for that. I don't think I was.
You got away with that one?
Well, the only reason I got away with it is because Richard Dent came running off the sidelines and pushed me down. So they were like, okay, those two evened out. He threw me to the floor.
Throw him to the floor?
Throw him to the floor? Oh, yes. Throw
you
him to the
You would have
floor,
done the
please.
Same for your teammate, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, he's like a huge defensive end, and he shed his coat and ran out there. I'm like, how did they miss that?
That's that thing. That image is what sealed it for me, was because I can see the Bears, and I don't know why, but the Bears always jumped out to me as the team that always had those big parkas.
Yeah.
And it's probably because it was so often so cold there, because all teams have, but I saw that, and I saw him shedding it to come to the aid. It's like a Superman-like moment. Yeah.
Well, I just had to
poor
point
Tracy
out,
Obi. He's being picked on by Dave Wyman.
Terry Obi. Well, and I just want to clear up for anybody that hasn't heard it that he did cut me when I wasn't looking. And so I fell on top of him and took the liberty of grinding his helmet into the mud while I got up off the ground.
My mom was there when you were saying that story for the first time. And she goes, it sounded like Dave got a little mad at him.
Yeah. Well, I remember you said, I thought you liked him. I said, well, once he tried to cut me, it kind of put a damper on the relationship. Just like Richard Dent shoving me to the floor.
Boy, Richard Dent, large human being.
He was a bad dude.
Yeah.
You know what? Back then, though, he was probably 285. Now,
he'd look like any other defensive lineman.
To quote Justin Britt, he's just a man. He's human.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for us. I want to thank Mike Ditka. It was fun to talk to the coach, the Professor John Clayton, Jessamyn McIntyre, who does everything to keep the show on the road. Curtis Rogers was on the board. And for the three of us, we always appreciate you listening. We thank you for it, and we look forward to talking to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.